What does it take to secure a summit? A long list of European states contributing personnel and equipment for a pair of EU gatherings in Denmark. A spate of mystery drones in the build-up exposing NATO's vulnerability to harassment and hybrid warfare. We'll ask about unexplained flyovers, ghost ships, and Russian denials, all in the context of spiking tensions in the Baltic Sea, where the stakes have never been higher since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. From calls for defensive drone walls to the return of conscription, how do Europeans beef up their own defense? And how much do they turn to NATO's historic guarantor, just when the United States seems to critics to be more interested in coveting Danish protectorate Greenland than defending against Russian threats of expansion? Today in the France 24 debate, are we ready for the age of drones? With us from Brussels, former Danish Foreign Minister Villy Søvndal, member of the European Parliament for Denmark's Green Left Party. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Retired French Air and Space Force General Jean-Marc Vigilant is the former director of the French War College here in Paris.
Good evening.
To see you. Thank you for being with us. From Vilnius in Lithuania, she's a former political officer at NATO. Samantha de Bendern, associate fellow at Chatham House. Good to see you.
Hello, good evening.
He hangs his hat in the EU capital, also home to NATO HQ, Brussels correspondent Dave Keating. How are you?
Good evening, Francois. Happy to be with you.
Reminder, if you're on the go, you can listen to the show wherever podcasts are streamed. It's a hybrid war, and Europe needs to step up its response. Those are the words of Denmark's prime minister, issuing that call at the opening of 2 days of summits in Copenhagen. Denmark, which holds the rotating presidency of the European Council, and which found itself asking allies, including, by the way, Ukraine, for help in preventing further drone incursions on its airport and military installations. Charlotte Lamb has more.
A mood of tension hangs over Copenhagen. A German warship has just docked. Its mission, to help protect the EU leaders meeting here Wednesday. On land, residents can't help but stare at the imposing vessel.
It make me relax. It can take down drones.
It's just presence and saying we are here, so please don't make anything bad to us.
Denmark is on high alert after reporting several drone incursions in recent weeks. 35 French soldiers are already on the ground. France, the US and Sweden have also sent anti-drone systems. But for many Danes, the deployment only underlines their country's military vulnerability.
It's definitely scary. We're not prepared for it.
Food?
Some residents are now bracing for the worst. Sarah just bought one of the survival kits distributed by the Danish government. Earlier in the year, people in the EU were advised to stockpile enough food, water and essentials for 72 hours. Part of a strategy to increase readiness in the event of a military attack or other national crises.
I got quite scared and I really wanted to do something. Perhaps have a little less anxiety feeling.
The anxiety isn't unfounded. 4 times last week, 2 mysterious drones were spotted over military bases and airports across the country. At the same time, 3 ships with Russian links were spotted off the Danish coast. Investigations are ongoing, but authorities say they may have served as launch pads for the drones. Denmark is among Europe's biggest donors to Ukraine and also hosts a factory that produces fuel for its long-range missiles.
Villy Søvndal, first off, your reaction to what we saw in that report, the anxiety of some in the Danish capital. By the way, people here in France have been told by the central bank to keep some cash on hand in case there's a cyber attack. Is this warranted, all these warnings?
I think we are in a situation which is getting more serious than it was. I mean, we've had a long time of that kind of cyber attacks. We have had a long period with testing our societies, and I think what Russia is doing just now is trying to shake our societies, to make us afraid. And I think it's important to keep a bit calm and not to be afraid. I mean, it's not in a situation where people are being killed. We're not in that situation. But of course, we are in the very front line because Denmark has been the country who has supported Ukraine most. We are making co-productions of weapons, both in Ukraine, but as you mentioned, also in Denmark. So I think Russia is just giving us a sign saying that what you do here, we are going to test. And what I am happy about today is to see not only a German ship, also the French are helping us, also the Swedish are helping us, also Ukraine is helping us. We are not in a situation where we are left alone. And I think we are in a situation which calls for European unity. That might be the most important lessons of all this. And then to say to the population, do not panic. It's not a situation where you are in danger. We need to step up with defense in Europe. We'll do that, but it's not an uncontrolled. We're not in a situation we cannot control.
Yeah, it's interesting, Vili Somdal, because the rest of the world has been paying a lot more attention to geography in your part of the world since February of 2022. At the other end of the Baltic Sea, there's Vladimir Putin's hometown of St. Petersburg and the stepped-up tensions that led Finland and Sweden to break with neutrality and join NATO. Closer to Copenhagen, and you can perhaps see it, it's busy indeed. Denmark's choke points around its capital, the Scandinavian equivalent, Vili Somdal, where I guess you could call it of the Bosphorus Straits, but without any international treaty on what or who goes through there. Does it feel volatile when you live in Copenhagen?
No, I think I would ask everyone to be a bit just thankful about what is taking place. We are being tested, but what we can see is that all the countries around the Baltic Sea are being tested. It's not only Denmark. Before that, it was three Baltic countries. It was Poland with now 19 drones. It was Sweden as well and Norway as well. They are testing us. And I think it's very important that we do not panic in this situation, but that we give answers to that in common among the European countries. And if we do that steadfast enough, I'm sure that the countries around the Baltic Sea are also the countries who are stepping up on military defense and military cooperation. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, and Finland. And you could add Norway as well, without the EU, but part of NATO and part of the common defense. You could add England, Great Britain as well. I mean, this is not a weak group of countries. This is a very, very strong alliance. And what is important is that we keep Ukraine as part of this alliance. In that case, Europe is a very strong alliance, and that's what I think we should work for.
Samantha de Bentern, you're in the capital of Lithuania, a Baltic state, former Soviet state, which shares a border with Russia because of the Kaliningrad exclave. Is that the takeaway where you are there? This is a show of unity, or is it rather showing up that we're woefully unprepared for hybrid warfare?
Well, I think if you speak to the Lithuanians, and I've been here for a few days now speaking to quite a few high officials, they still feel confident that there is a certain amount of unity both in Europe and within NATO. I think they'd be very reluctant to say something different. But regarding drones, I had a really fascinating conversation with the deputy head of the Border Guard Service, who is one of the agencies responsible for monitoring the drones that cross into Lithuania from Belarus. Last year, there were over 700 drones entered Lithuanian airspace from Belarus. Now, that sounds very dramatic. 99% of these were involved in cigarette smuggling from Belarus into Lithuania. So I asked him a question. You know, Lithuania now has the permission to shoot down these drones. And he said, well, you know, we're not going to shoot them all down. We just do not have the air power. And it's often not worth it. We just let them drop and we monitor where they drop. We try to control the smuggling. He said, however, these drones carry up to 30 kilos of goods. What if they start bringing in something other than cigarettes? And this is a real threat. So for countries on the front line, because this is the front line, this is not anything new. And they actually have a lot to teach the rest of Europe, just as Ukrainians have a lot to teach the rest of Europe in terms of drone warfare and how to do it cheaply and efficiently. Because there's no point in scrambling F-16s or F-35s to bring down drones which are worth a few hundred dollars and using equipment which is worth millions of dollars. And that really is one of the challenges that Europe is facing. And the Baltics do feel that Western Europe does not really understand the threat, that when Russia puts Oreshnik missiles into Belarus, these are not missiles that are aimed at the Baltic states because they have a much longer range. They have a range which would allow them to reach a West European capital. And that is the message that the Baltics want the Western Europeans to understand. They may be geographically close to Europe, but the threat concerns the whole of Europe because Vladimir Putin wants to divide us.
This is an essential question at this point, Jean-Marc Vigidon. We don't have yet proof of what these drones are about, but we have these sightings, and now all of them make the news. Sightings in Denmark, of course, which shut down airports. Sightings in Norway. The German state of Schleswig-Holstein this Wednesday stating that last week they had a critical infrastructure flown over by unidentified unmanned objects. So now we're paying attention to everything, and this gets back to what was said at the outset of the show. How do you keep cool?
I keep cool. I wouldn't say that I keep cool, but the fact is that this hybrid war led by Russia will increase because, in fact,
is it hybrid war though? Is it hybrid war, or
we
don't have any proof that.
But we should talk about hybrid strategies because nobody is going to declare war formally. So hybrid strategies, certainly, and this is because they have. I mean, in the conventional fight in Ukraine, they are stalled. You have one of the major military power, which is enabled to conquer a country four or five times smaller. And this is a strategic failure for Russia. As it is enabled to win this conventional war, and I don't think that they will dare engage NATO in a conventional fight either, they are increasing their hybrid strategies to put more pressure on our societies.
So you're convinced that what happened in Denmark at those military and airport installations is the Russians?
I'm convinced that it's not by accident, and we're witnessing a campaign which started early this month in September in Poland, in Romania, then in the Baltic state, and now in Denmark. We are being tested, for sure. And if it was by accident, anyway, we are being tested because they are just looking at our reactions.
Are we passing the test?
I think so, because the air defense of the air forces of the NATO countries were able to properly respond. That's true that they are dedicated to fight other fighters, air forces, and as it was rightly said, we are not on the right side of the cost curve when we shot down 10,000 euros drones with a million euros missiles. However, these drones, which are entering the NATO airspace, they have no warheads. They are just maybe on a reconnaissance mission. And I don't think that Russia will cross this line. They perfectly understand what are the red lines for NATO. And if they would to really commit a clear hostile act, this will be much easier for us to respond or to react. That's why they are staying below the threshold of military reaction.
And yet, Dave Keating, and yet, There's all this talk about now a drone wall to defend Europe and its allies. Tell us about how far we've gotten after this first day of informal meetings in Copenhagen.
Yeah, this has been discussed by EU leaders there in Copenhagen today. This is going to be an EU project in a way that the EU has really not been involved in defense before. But right now, it's only the Eastern EU countries participating, and we've heard skepticism from Western European countries. French President Emmanuel Macron coming into the Copenhagen summit saying that he thinks it's really not well thought out, the idea for the drone wall, that it's not clear exactly what it would be. And he said that the EU should be investing in cheaper, faster technology, such as surface-to-air missiles or early warning detection systems. Similarly, Germany's defense minister, Pistorius, said that he doesn't think it's a good idea, that it's not well thought out, that it's a waste of money. We've also heard skepticism from southern European countries, Italy's Giorgia Meloni, Greece's Prime Minister Mitsotakis, saying that, hey, you can't be only focusing on the eastern border. If we're going to be doing something like this, we should also be thinking about the southern border and the security there. So far, I don't know, this hasn't been a great show of unity for the EU as a whole, because the Western European countries have kept such a distance from this. We did have, I should say, initially it was going to be all of the Eastern EU countries except Hungary participating in this. At the last minute, Hungary did say that they would join in. It's not exactly clear why, because they still don't really seem very enthusiastic about it. But so far, this drone wall project is kind of short on detail. It's meant to solve exactly what you were just talking about, that these 10,000 euro drones were shot down by 1 million euro missiles. I mean, that was not a good look for NATO. It was embarrassing that these small drones that entered Poland had to be shot down with jets that were not meant to be fighting little drones, that the EU needs its own drones to combat other drones. But it seems that the French and German governments are not so convinced that the EU needs drones to fight drones.
Not so convinced. And we saw among the countries that have been helping out has been Ukraine in advising, as we said at the outset, helping out the Ukrainians who've made light year strides in their defense of their country against Russia the last couple of years. We can show you images of the army there training troops and civilians to shoot down drones by target practice on helium balloons with erratic flight paths, like here in the northeast Kharkiv region.
I can amplify on that.
We chose this training method with personnel using balloons, because a balloon behaves unpredictably in the air. Depending on the wind, it can fly left, right, up or down, and it also depends on the wind speed.
Jean-Marc Vigilant, your thoughts on this. So this is great news, by the way, because France is, I don't know if you've heard, is broke. So basically, this isn't an argument for buying a new fleet of Rafale jets.
Yes, but the thing is, we shouldn't, from my point of view, we shouldn't speak about a drones wall, because it gives the false impression that we might have a perfect watertight bubble, which will not be the case. However, we have to work on a multi-layer defense system with capability for detection, identification, jamming, or even kinetic destruction, be through laser, high-energy beams, or through other small drones. But the only way there are different ways of fighting drones. We are not obliged to respond in the same way with the same assets in the same domain, and we have to strike the right balance between defense and offense. And we can absolutely target our adversary in other domains, for example, in the economical domains, and it is what we're already doing with economical sanctions. And we can think of other ways of putting more pressure on Russia, for example, targeting their ghost fleet so that they can't get the funding from selling illegally their oil across the world.
Yeah, ghost fleet, which is making headlines this Wednesday, much attention on a Benin-registered EU-sanctioned oil tanker carrying crude from Russia to India, happened to be, guess where, off of Denmark during some of those mystery drone flights, and now the subject of scrutiny from French authorities for what President Macron calls serious offenses. The Boracay, now anchored off the France's Atlantic coast, it's even been boarded by the French military. Caris Garland has more.
Part of the so-called shadow fleet involved in the Russian oil trade, this tanker, hit by EU sanctions, is now the subject of a French investigation. Known under various names like Boracay, Pushpin and PFOS, the vessel has been anchored off France's Atlantic coast for several days. The probe was launched over the crew's failure to justify the nationality of the vessel and refusal to cooperate. While attending an EU summit on Wednesday, the French president praised prosecutors' actions.
There were some very serious mistakes made by this crew, which justify the fact that the case is now being investigated. But this highlights the presence and reality of a phenomenon that we've been describing and denouncing for a long time. We have between 600 and 1,000 ships operating this way, enabling Russian oil to be transported, even when it's banned.
The European Union has slapped sanctions on hundreds of tankers used by Russia to circumvent oil export curbs imposed after its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. According to Macron, the shadow fleet finances 40% of Moscow's war effort. Despite its aims to cripple the Russian economy, the EU still imports Russian-made crude, notably from India. Shipping data show Boracay left a Russian port on September 20th before navigating close to Denmark around the 23rd. The vessel's path has aroused suspicions that it was involved in mystery drone flights that disrupted air traffic in Denmark between September 22nd and 28th. Macron, however, stopped short of linking the tanker to the incursions, saying it wasn't for him to do so. The same vessel was detained and then released by Estonia in April, at the time known by its previous name Koala. Authorities said it wasn't sailing under a flag, a violation of maritime law.
So, Vili Sövendal, you heard there in that report the French president, who doesn't want to make an affirmative link between that ghost ship and the drone incidents in Denmark. Your thoughts on this vessel that's changed names five times in the last couple of years?
I think there is a reason why a ship changes names five times. And I think we should do every step we can to strengthen the grip on this shadow fleet. For a number of reasons, I'm sure there is a connection between shadow fleets and drones used on Copenhagen Airport. I'm sure there is a connection between shadow fleet and the risk of environmental catastrophe if one of these ships, which are not very well kept in these narrow straits between Denmark and Sweden, is making a catastrophe. But also to weaken Russian economy. There are two main ways of winning a war. One of the, is a military one, which is a bit stalemate. No one is really winning in a way that the war is decided military. The other way is the economic one. EU now has decided more quick than planned to get rid of Russian oil and gas. Ursula von der Leyen mentioned in her speech of the Union that by the end of 2026, we should buy no more oil and gas from Russia. That's one way. The other is a shadow fleet. It's been a lot more expensive for these shadow fleet to sail with Russian oil and gas because they are not having the same easy possibilities as they used to have. And I think we should just continue and strengthen and strengthen and strengthen.
So let me ask you,
Russian
Let me ask you concretely, what do you do then? Do you seize the tanker? What are you suggesting happens next to this ship?
I think we should make a lot of common between the European countries, also coast guards between the countries in the EU. Everyone has an interest that this is not continuing.
So should this ship be allowed to sail on to India, where it's destination?
It should be tested what it's doing, and every step that's possible within the international law of sea, I think should be taken. We have a very big interest in stopping this.
Dave Keating, how much attention on this ship among those EU leaders this Wednesday?
Well, I think they'll be very aware that it just passed by where they are at the moment. There's a lot of questions still about that drone activity. I think what'll be interesting after the French authorities boarded the ship, I suppose, is if they found any evidence of drones having been there, being there now. We may get some more information now as a result of that. But, you know, there will be a big question. Let's say that they do identify that the drones came from this ship. Do you then close that straits over the Oresund to international traffic? That's never happened before. Do you take some kind of drastic action in response to Russia? I think it would be a difficult situation because that is actually not a Russian flagged ship, and it would open the possibility of the EU kind of entering areas I think it's probably not comfortable entering.
Samantha de Bendern, your prediction, and what do you think should happen?
I hate making predictions. The only one I can make, the little bit of confidence, is that I think that these kind of incidents are going to continue, be they drones, mysterious drones, be it sabotage incidents. There is a real risk, of course, of cyber incidents. The Danish Prime Minister talked about this today in an interesting interview in the Financial Times. Regarding the Shadow Fleet, one really interesting piece of information is that 70% of Russia's oil exports go through the Baltic Sea. The seaborne exports. So if it could be made more difficult for the Shadow Fleet to circulate in the Baltic Sea, while, of course, respecting maritime law, that could seriously damage the Russians. So what could be done? There could be more inspections. Do they have the right insurance? Why are they on the sea without a proper flag? And that could start to put a lot of pressure on Russia. There's also this feeling that the Baltic Sea is very vulnerable because of Kaliningrad. And we forget that Kaliningrad, the Russian enclave, which is an exclave, which is surrounded by EU and NATO countries, is actually itself very vulnerable. It depends on Lithuania for gas transit, but Lithuania still allows because there's an agreement between Russia and Lithuania. It depends on Lithuania and the EU's goodwill for the transit of goods and people through Lithuanian territory. It also depends on LNG that comes from Russia across the Baltic Sea. There are ways of putting a lot of pressure on Russia, which would, of course, raise tensions. It would there are a few things that can be done which would not be war, but which would also be this new generation warfare. You know, the Russians don't talk about hybrid war. They talk about new generation warfare because for them, the acts of sabotage, the acts of intimidation, these kind of drone flights, testing us by having planes go through our airspace, are part of warfare. It's not hybrid warfare, it's new generation warfare. Maybe, a NATO member state could start flying some F-35s close to Kaliningrad just to see the reaction. You know, show the Russians that we also have some teeth. We're not just going to sit back and watch this happen. And regarding the drone wall, what the incident in Denmark showed us is that you don't have to have, where did these drones come from? What range did they have? The idea that they could have come off a shadow ship, this is not proven, but this is a hypothesis, follows other Russian sabotage activities where they recruit local people in country who sometimes unbeknownst who sometimes don't even know that they're being commissioned by Russia to do things, they're given money and they're told to do acts of sabotage. So what European countries need are domestic anti-drone training programs, be it drone jamming, that's something that the Ukrainians do very effectively, shooting down drones with rifles, the Ukrainians again do that very effectively. This is not just a problem for the border states, because the Russians have shown in the past that they can undertake acts of sabotage from within EU and NATO countries. So it is a problem for all of us. And it's not just a wall. Today, in this new generation warfare, the concept of borders and walls has become extremely fluid, because there are people who are being recruited within to carry out. And I don't want to use the expression enemy within because of the connotations it has with a number of unsavory people.
That was Tuesday's debate after the speech by Donald Trump. Another Russian ship, by the way, that's been in the news, the Yantar, which if you look at the website vesselfinder.com, calls a research vessel, and whose location last pinpointed 249 days ago, says that site. The Financial Times calls it something else, a spy ship suspected of providing logistics for recent undersea cable sabotage in the Baltic Sea, but also perhaps elsewhere, and doing surveillance not just in the Baltics, but in the Atlantic Ocean. The newspaper publishes a photo of the Yantar shadowed by a British military vessel, but the means are lacking due to a shortage of Type 23 anti-submarine frigates. UK coastal patrol boats have been deployed to shadow Russian vessels on some occasion. Coastal patrol boats. And, you know, I joked earlier about the French being broke. It was the cover of last week's edition of The Economist. The British are broke, too. You're still going to have to spend a lot more money if we're going to keep up with this hybrid threat, General.
We have, definitely. And that's why economy is part of the warfare. So we have to increase our ability to spend more money so that we can increase our defense capabilities. And we will, because the NATO nations committed to increase their spending up to 3.5% for defense capability, plus 1.5% of their GDP for critical infrastructure and resilience, which is key if we want to resist hybrid strategies.
And do you think public opinion is following? We're on the eve of another strike day in France where people want more money for pension,
I think so.
Not for defense.
I think so, because we don't need to link defense and pensions or reform of the welfare state. There is quite, even in France, there is quite a consensus on the fact that we need to increase our defenses in front of all threats. And we have to do that with our European allies. And it is exactly what we are doing.
All right. If money was no object, that still wouldn't be enough, warns the Danish Prime Minister. Mette Frederiksen, speaking at the outset of these 2 days of talks with her EU counterparts.
And of course, I want us to rearm. I want us to buy more capabilities. I want us to innovate more, for example, on drones. But at the same time, we have to be very, very transparent and frank. In a hybrid war, you cannot defend yourself against all different kind of activities. It's the whole idea of a hybrid war, to do many different things at the same time.
Vili Sovendal, yours is a country that had, to a large degree, divested from a lot of defense funding. And there was a 180-degree turn taken a few years back because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So this hybrid war, how much is it going to cost?
It's going to cost. We're not made a fully turnover. The situation is just fully different, not only because of Russia, also because we suddenly are unsure of US. Where do they stand? Can we rely on them as an ally? We are not fully sure about that. But of course, it's about more money of defense. There are some capacities we need to have. We need to develop drone development in a way we did not before. But it's also a discussion about the way we spent the money. Europe has a lot of different kinds of tanks, of airplanes, etc. And we need to stand out a lot more the European production than we have done before. I think that's important. Then we have to make broad alliances. It's not only Europe, it's also Canada. It's also US, as far as we can rely on them, which we have to cooperate closer with. And it's also, I think, important to think defense of Europe in regional terms. We talked about the Baltic Sea before. It's one of the very tense areas, I think, for the future. Like the Arctic area is going to be a very tense area as well. I'm a member of the Defense Committee in the Parliament. We spend a lot of time about discussing how do we create a European defense that we can defend ourselves. I think we learned both from Russia's attack on Ukraine, but also from US President, that we have to be able to rely on ourselves. And then just the most important thing is to secure that Ukraine, which has the next biggest European army, the most well-trained army, the most innovative army, is remaining a part of Europe. If we succeed with that, I'm not so disturbed about the future.
Yeah, Vili, you mentioned there questions over the United States. When Donald Trump Tuesday convened all his generals in the field for an unprecedented sit-down outside Washington at a military base, he and his war secretary talked up upgrades in weaponry, but only mentioned Russia to say they weren't cooperating on a Ukraine ceasefire. Zero mention of the United States' future role in Europe, where it still has 84,000 military personnel stationed. So if we're talking drone walls, if we're talking about upgrades, is it within NATO, Vili Svindal, or should Europe go its own way with this next generation preparedness for warfare?
I think we're already preparing for doing it on our own. We do not know if US is on board or not. If they are, it would be nice, and we would welcome that. But I mean, to take the responsibility to build the European defense is not built on what you hope. It's built on the worst scenario. And the worst scenario is that US is no longer full-time part of it, and we have to be able to do it on our own. So I think that is what we should be planning for. I think that's also what we do. We are now planning for how to do it without the US presence as we knew it. We are buying a lot more European when we buy weapons from the different countries with their capacities. So I think we are on our way, but we need to speed up. We might not have so many years before we should be able to do that ourselves.
General Vigino, in a previous life, you were stationed at the U.S. headquarters of NATO, in Norfolk, Virginia. When you look at the generals in those rooms, what's going on right now, do you think? First of all, for the Europeans that are there, and also for their U.S. counterparts, are there secret talks on the side of how to move things forward? Is it everybody in their own lane?
I think that, I mean, for the European there, it's business as usual. It might be different for the U.S. military, because what we can witness is that it's more and more difficult for them to remain apolitical. Normally, in a democratic country, armed forces respect the constitution, of course, and is loyal to the government, which has been elected by the people, and that's it. But we usually don't ask a military force to take a side, and it seems that there might be this kind of way ahead in America currently.
So is it going to be next generation upgrade for Europe's military with or without NATO?
I think still we have this confusion of thinking that NATO is the US. NATO is primarily a European organization with the US. But in NATO you have 32 allies, of which 29 are Europeans. So if the US have different interests and are not any longer committed as much as they used to be in Europe or to Europe, then obviously the European will have to do more, and they will do more in NATO by bringing more defense capabilities so that they do not depend as much on the US strategic enablers, for example. And NATO is a primarily organization for countering military threat. We were talking about hybrid strategies. The European Union has more tools to address these hybrid strategies because, as I told you at the beginning of this interview, they develop in different domains, being at sea, as we've seen, in cyberspace, in the economical space, in the information space. And this is precisely where the European Union or a greater Europe, including our non-EU NATO partners, for example, could have a great value for increasing the resilience of the people in our countries and resisting in a better way potential Russian hybrid strategies.
Samantha De Bender, you agree?
Yes, I agree. So there's a number of things here. I think that what the recent events have shown us, for instance, the creation of this so-called coalition of the willing, is that there are times when countries that are members of NATO are able to get together, act outside of a NATO framework. A lot of talk here in the Baltics is of the fact that, okay, if we are dropped by the United States, we will still have our Nordic partners. So that's Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, the three Baltics. The Joint Expeditionary Force that also includes the United Kingdom. So there's a lot of creative thinking going on as to what alliances could be forged in a real-world situation if the United States were to drop out. And that is a real fear when you speak to people here in Lithuania. You know, there have been threats by the United States to lessen its forces that are stationed here. When you hear Donald Trump talk about the threats, the primary threats that, and also Pete Hegseth, the primary threats that they believe the United States are facing are a threat from within, narco trafficking from South America and China. Europe seems to be further down the line in terms of a US priority. So Europe is going to have to step up its game. It's going to have to produce more. It's going to have to buy European. That is a big challenge when you're here in the Baltics, explaining to people you're going to have to buy European because there's a strong tendency to buy American here. But and just one last thing, there have been a number of war games and scenarios that have been played out by some very interesting people. Carlo Massala, who is a former professor at the NATO Defense College in Rome, who's also a professor in Germany, wrote a book about a potential Russian incursion in a Baltic republic. And the United States decided not to invoke Article 5. A war game was done by one of my former colleagues at Chatham House. It involved the former British Minister of Defense, with a Russian attack on the UK, and no American involvement. So there are scenarios that are being played out as to what would happen. And each European country has European allies that it can depend on. The British and the French are coming together. They are talking about coordination, potentially, of their nuclear deterrence. There are alternatives to allied security amongst NATO member states that could work without the US.
So very briefly, Dave Keating, how far along are they on Plan B? Because it looks as though the matter is pressing.
I really disagree that the EU is very far along on this. I mean, I think what's being described are these small ad hoc alliances, a Nordic bloc, some limited toe-dipping into Franco-British cooperation. But the EU is still being blocked from actual command control over military issues. It's now getting into the area of financing, but there's still this concern that it's going to be a duplication with NATO and that it would threaten NATO if the EU gets involved in actual military control. NATO's command and control structure is American-controlled. The EU High Rep for Foreign Affairs, Kaja Kallas, said just last week, there is no NATO without the United States. The idea that because NATO is majority European countries, that makes it a European organization, that's just not the reality of how NATO has worked all these past decades. It's good that there's exercises being run for if Russia attacks and the U.S. doesn't come to Europe's defense, because that is a very likely scenario. I think, you know, we're looking at a situation where it's the most likely scenario that the U.S. would not come to Europe's defense. And one last point on the gathering of generals in Washington. What was really notable there is that the focus was on this enemy within, as was just being discussed. You know, you had these American generals pulled out of Europe, brought to D.C. and told next you're going to be deployed on American streets in Chicago, in L.A., in Portland. That is the U.S. pulling away its focus away from Europe and looking at internal conflict.
All right. We'll have to leave it there for now. Dave Keating in Brussels, I want to thank you. I want to thank Willy Servendal for being with us as well from the European capital. Jean-Marc Vigilant, Samantha de Bentern in Vilnius, thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.